Welcome to the House of Pod, a show where we pull back the curtain on the world of medicine, we answer questions about your health, and we interview great guests.
I'm Joe, and I'm not a doctor.
And I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Kaveh.
And we're two gastroenterologists.
What's a gastroenterologist?
You know, the doctors who work with your digestive system.
Say what?
You know, your liver, your pancreas, your intestines.
Where now?
Your butt, Joe. It's your butt.
Oh.
Welcome back to the House of Pod. I'm Kaveh.
I'm Lizzie. You sound so sad.
I'm deflated. I'm a little deflated.
Why are you deflated, Kaveh?
You know, I'm just so disappointed in some of the nonsense I'm seeing online. So much. And I've tried so hard to stay above it, above the internet fray. And I've done a good job since, you know, the elections, basically back in November 2016. I think I've done a pretty good job. And now I find myself confronted with the most incredible nonsense constantly, pseudoscience, garbage, all these weird conspiracy theories. And that, my friend, segue, you ready, is why on today's show we have Rebecca Watson. She is one of the internet's preeminent skeptics. She is the founder of Skeptchick. It's a blog. It's great. And she's going to help us get through some of this stuff.
With respect to Corona, yeah?
Exactly. That was a pretty good segue, right?
That was really good. Let's get to the interview because it's super interesting and it's worthwhile. So stay tuned.
All right, welcome back to the House of Pod. We have with us today Rebecca Watson, who is a media sensation. She is the founder of the Skeptchick blog. She's worked with the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. She has her own YouTube channel, which I highly recommend you guys check out and subscribe to. We'll put links on for everything. And she is the creator of Quizzotron, the world's preeminent comedy / science trivia show. I love it. Both Lisa and I have been on it, and we've had a ton of fun whenever we've done it. And more importantly, she has been fighting pseudoscience for over a decade now, I believe. And right now, we need her more than ever. And that's why we have her on today. We're going to talk to her about combating pseudoscience, combating misinformation online. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan. What you guys are doing is important. You're somehow putting this podcast out regularly while still saving lives.
Like, go on.
Colonoscopy.
Yeah. Hear more of this.
Saving lives, one colonoscopy at a time. That's how we're doing it.
They do save lives, and you know, shout out to all my like 50 plus friends. Colonoscopy.
Nice.
Yeah. They do.
We do more than colonoscopies for the love
of God.
It's
just funny.
Let us make some butt jokes.
But you know what this episode is about? It's about being accurate and it's about telling the truth. And that's what we're here to do. So I need your help, Rebecca. That's pretty much why you're here. It's because, you know, I've been pretty good since 2016, since the initial sort of chaos of the election. I've been pretty good about avoiding online confrontation.
Wow.
Because it doesn't get that far. I learned very early on. I tried. I did my best. But I learned very early on that it gets nowhere. But now it's particularly hard for me to not get involved because literal lives are at stake. It's not just, you know, someone's has a different belief in a politician's economic plan or whatever. It's literal lives at stake. And I have plenty of people I know on Facebook who put out stuff routinely that I'm just like, no, that's not true. And we'll get into arguments and they may be kind of reasonable and listening, but then that person has friends that's really far off the far off the end and they argue and there's so much misinformation going on. And it's become such a weird time where facts, everyone has a different set of facts and that's not how facts should be, is my understanding of facts. So I need your help in combating this. Can you help us?
Oh, I can try. Speaking as someone who is terminally online and has been for a long time, to the point that I have brain worms from, you know, the amount of internet arguments I've been in over the past decade. One point of correction in the interest of accuracy is that lives have always been on the line. There's always been a real harm to pseudoscience and misinformation. It's just that usually you're a few steps removed from the end result. So, you know, the big example, like the closest thing that I could think of to compare what's happening right now to is the anti-vaccine community that, you know, I've been fighting for more than a decade. And the thing is, like, I've always known that that's extremely deadly. The idea, you know, people spreading the misinformation that vaccines cause autism, generally it's the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, based on faulty science from Andrew Wakefield, and spread by people like Jenny McCarthy through people like Oprah. The more this misinformation spread, the more we saw a rising body count in these outbreaks of measles around the United States and in other places where these diseases were either considered eradicated or were close to being eradicated. And that was really frustrating. But there was still always this separation where the people spreading the misinformation could distance themselves from it. The numbers weren't bad enough. They didn't necessarily know people who were affected. The average listener, the average layperson didn't know anyone who had died of measles or right, whatever. So now, though, you have a lot of those same people spreading a lot of the same type of misinformation about COVID-19. And suddenly, it's a very quick turnaround.
Right.
So, you know, lives have always been on the line. But right now, well, it's kind of like what we talk about when we talk about flattening the curve. You know, you're going to, you know, we want there to be, we want the deaths to be spread out over time. Mm-hmm. That's the way pseudoscience usually is. We don't want them all globbed up together to overwhelm us. And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Right. So, but when it's all globbed up together, you see the harm of that misinformation. And it's so much starker than other things.
Isn't it just so sad that, like, what you're saying with the vaccine stuff, that we need to know someone for it to, like, kind of hit home? I'm like, wasn't Tom Hanks or Rita Wilson, wasn't that enough for people to, like, turn the tide, you know?
Honestly, you're so right. That's been one of the things that has been the biggest source of my own anxiety at the start of this, is realizing that so many people out there just don't have empathy. They need to know someone.
Right. Yeah, I want to definitely talk to you about empathy and how to apply some of, you know, your rabbit holes and your wormholes, your brain worms to to humanity, you know, to come out of the computer and get to humanity. But I first wanted to ask you about, you know, you're a fan of science, you know, dispelling pseudoscience, critical thinking, using facts, right? Everything that we're very interested and excited about. But how do you reconcile the things that we all love, science and medicine and truth, with what will happen in the next few months? I feel like we're going to lose no matter what, right? So there's going to be fewer deaths because of the shelter in place, which means people are going to say, we should have ended the shelter in place sooner. You guys are hysterical. The quarantine was for nothing. Or we put our guard down and people are going to die. And this will prove a point, or the point that we're trying to make, but no doctor and no scientist will be happy about the point that will be made.
Wait, let me clarify that. Actually, they'll still take that point. And they will also say, look, you see, it didn't work at all. Shelter in place didn't work at all. No matter what, we're going to lose that argument.
Yeah. And in fact, so this is something that I've thought a lot about in the past few months. And unfortunately, my response is a pretty nihilist one, which is what Kaveh gets to there, is it's, they are constantly pushing the goalposts. They are, so And I've got actually a video that is basically about this in part. It's that I thought that the worst, the most annoying result of all this was going to be that politicians listen to the experts, they do early testing and maybe quarantine where we don't have tests and not many people die. And then we have a bunch of conservatives shouting, you know, you overreacted. And I was wrong, because what's way more annoying is to have them ignore the experts and 70,000 people die and they are still saying you're overreacting. Right. For those mouthpieces, and they're not, you know, the loudest voices are not coming from a place of ignorance. You know, the news came out today that Governor Abbott in Texas, and he was recorded earlier last week saying that he knew that opening up the state was going to increase deaths significantly, and he was still going to do it. And he said this privately while publicly saying there might be some deaths, but it's not a big deal. So what's important to understand is that this isn't ignorance. It's not just people who don't understand that early action will prevent deaths and that will look like an overreaction. These are actors who genuinely don't care about the number of deaths. When you drill down, they know that it's dangerous. They're going to do it anyway because it benefits their stock portfolio, or it benefits their chances for re-election, or they think it does. And once you accept that, like, unfortunately, you know, it's very hard to accept that because I don't want to believe that anybody is that horrible, but they are. And then you've got a lot of other people who also don't want to believe anybody would be that horrible, and so they won't. And so they'll believe that, oh, the governor has our best interests in mind. We should all go back to work.
You know? The governor is thinking, you know, dead people aren't going to vote. So.
Yeah.
I mean, that's terrible.
It's extremely frustrating, but I mean, that is something that as a science communicator, I need to learn to accept, is that, you know, the talking heads on Fox News, for instance, you know, they're part of the problem, that are, you know, they're spreading this misinformation more than anyone. And they are spreading this misinformation from their basements, you know, having groceries delivered to them and staying away from people because they know it's a serious problem, but they make money off of pretending it's not. And you're never going to convince them because they already know the facts. The people that you're reaching out to are, you know, your cousin on Facebook who, you know, watched Fox News and just believed them because they were brought up to believe that talking heads are worth believing. And so that's, like, I've tried to keep my eye on the prize in that respect because, you know, I have a lot of family on that I see spreading this type of misinformation. And my goal isn't to convince Sean Hannity to stop saying what he's saying. My job is to convince my cousin to think critically about what she's hearing Sean Hannity say.
Right, right.
You know,
our sphere of influence. Well, let's drill down into some of these things that we're hearing about and that we're seeing online. The first thing I would say is this. This is one of the first arguments that you saw online, and this is one of the ones that still pops up. Is COVID-19 being over or under diagnosed?
Yeah, so this is one of the unfortunate benefits of having family that believe this sort of thing, is that I don't live in a bubble, you know. I wish I did, where you would say that to me and I would just be like, what? Obviously professional medical professionals are diagnosing it at the correct level because that's what they went to school for 20 years to do. but yeah, I saw this being passed around, this idea, you know, once the deaths started piling up, I had that thought where it's like, oh, okay, well now it's, people have to admit that this is a problem. How are you going to ignore all of these deaths? And when I read up on it, I'm like, oh, this is how they are claiming that people somehow, like doctors are saying, hey, you know what? I could make more money somehow by saying that this death was a COVID-19 death, even though this guy died in a car accident. You know, he got hit by a semi, but we tested him, he had COVID-19. So it's a COVID-19 death. And I did start to notice this early on when family members asked me, because, you know, I'm the science communicator and I was just really happy and excited to be able to help. And they asked me like, well, how many people are dying with preconditions? It seems like it's a lot. And I'm like, oh, it is a lot. Yeah, it's like not, it's like 98% of people have other conditions. Yeah. And they're like, well, there you go. And I'm like, oh, what do you mean? And they're like, well, there you go. You know, if you're going to die anyway, you're going to die. And I'm like, oh, no. Preconditions are things like diabetes.
Your family probably has. They have some of these things, you know, they're half not impervious.
Half of the United States has cardiovascular disease. And I realized, you know, and that's why it's hard, but it's actually important to have these conversations, because before that, a few things hadn't occurred to me. One, that they wouldn't understand what preconditions meant. Like when they hear preconditions, they're picturing someone on a ventilator already, you know, who gets it and dies. Not like half of the United States walking around every day, living their best lives. And number two, it's the idea that people with preconditions should die, you know, and that it's not a big deal.
Right.
And it's like, but no, those are people. Those are people who we love and care about. And, you know, they're our parents, they're our children with immunocompromised systems, you know. And it's like, it was a real learning moment for me to realize, like, okay, this is the communication barrier we need to get past, is to teach the general public what some scientific, and you know, we went through this with evolution, like it's just a theory. There's always going to be usually conservatives taking a particular scientific term and giving it its everyday usage and then trying to move forward based on that. So same sort of thing. It's just a theory. People with preconditions die, etc. So one thing is like educating the public about these preconditions. Another thing is empathy. like these are human beings that could live another 50 years. Who cares? Yeah. They could live another day, and they should, you know?
Right. Even the people that are older, that like people, they say, oh, they're old. How long do you expect people to live? Like even those people, they still have like, you know what, 10 years at least, even those ends of the extreme, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys experienced this, but as I approach my 40s and my parents are getting up there, and I look at my parents, and my parents don't look like my grandparents looked. My parents look young and healthy, and they like go on runs, and you know, they've got their treadmill and they're like really fit, and it's like they've got decades left. Just because they're 70 doesn't mean it's time for them to die.
Yeah.
You know? So to get back to your original question about whether it's overdiagnosed or underdiagnosed, the first thing I thought when I saw that claim being made is like, oh, well, we just need to see the numbers, the all-cause mortality rates in New York City, for instance, from last March and the March before that, compare them to this past March and see what we get. And I went on a deep dive. I really tried to find those numbers. They're extremely difficult to find because of the amount of work that goes into vetting causes of death, all causes of death. It's difficult. So a lot of states don't make those numbers readily available to the general public, which is good because you don't need a bunch of you know, amateur epidemiologists like me poking around in data they don't know anything about.
Well, I was going to say, why not? They just don't want to be like, you know, come to Texas. We have the second lowest number of deaths in the United States. Like, right. Is it, it's just bad PR, I guess. Like, why not make that available?
I think it's just, I suspect it's something like, why not make every scientific paper available before it goes through peer review? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. You've got a lot of data and let's make sure it's right before we put it out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's generally fine. And so I made a video about that. I mentioned it. I'm like, you know, so in a couple years, in a year maybe, we can look at this data and we'll be able to see, like, because, you know, it's not just how many people died of COVID-19. It's, you know, did more people die because the hospitals were overwhelmed? Did right. fewer people die because fewer people were driving to work every day? Did more right. people die because there's more domestic abuse situations? You know,
right.
it's a lot of data and a lot of ways to crunch it. And so I said, you know, we'll see in a year or two. And then 2 weeks later, New York made their data public. For this very reason, because I think because so many people were right. saying, oh, they're overdiagnosing COVID-19. And so the New York Times got the data and then looked at the data and found, no, a shit ton more people are dying than the number of COVID-19 deaths that are on record. So, you know, compared to previous years. So right. it's much, much worse than we right. thought.
It's underreported, if anything. I think that's yes. sort of, it's funny that, like, I was having this online discussion with somebody, and it very quickly went from, like, you know, hey, we really appreciate you essential workers, you doctors out there working, to being like, you are a shill for some sort of weird pharmaceutical right. company. The NWO is somehow behind this overdiagnosis, and we're all going to get brain chips by Bill Gates. Like, I'm not even really exaggerating. That's kind of where that.
Oh, I know you're not.
You know?
Yeah, that's the human brain does that. They, I've gone through a very similar thing with a lot of self-proclaimed skeptics who start out saying, like, oh, a woman is also saying Bigfoot doesn't exist. You're the greatest princess that ever existed. And then it's like, oh, but you don't want men to touch you at conferences? Feminazi, you know? It's like that's what people do. They, you know, they put you on a pedestal, they drag you down. It's two sides of the same coin instead of just seeing you as a human being.
Right. So with Bill Gates putting chips in your brain and 5G and, you know, the bats and, you know, all the, what's the most, I guess, popular or the most crazy conspiracy theory with respect to Corona that you've seen or read about that you would like to, for our listeners, acknowledge and then please immediately dispel it.
God. Yeah. Can I tell you, like, the thing that I was, you know, everybody is wrong about stuff sometimes. And this isn't something I was wrong to say it, but I wasn't wrong. So, back in like early February, when this was first sort of going through China, and I was starting to check in on the crazies on Facebook, and I was seeing a lot of fear mongering, legitimate, like usually racist, anti-Chinese fear-mongering.
Yeah.
And I made a video about it where I related, and I hadn't seen anyone do this up until now, but I was like, if you're scared of coronavirus, you should look at the numbers for the flu. And if those numbers bother you, you should get a flu shot. Because I've been trying to tell people to get flu shots for the last, you know, decade. I've been hammering at home, like, the flu kills a lot of fucking people. It's really scary. You should get your flu shot.
Yeah.
And
thank you for your service, by the way. Thank you. We appreciate that.
Of course. I make a video about it every year. Nice. I force all of my friends to get their flu shots. And so, but my point at the time was, the number of people this is killing is scary. Because it's, and this is killing the same number of people, but you're not scared of it. You should be scared of this. But now that became a talking point for Fox News, right. The comparing coronavirus to the annual flu became a talking point, but it was with the opposite meaning that I had. Like, my point was like, you should be scared of both of these. And Fox News is like, doesn't matter. Like, that's not a, it's just like the flu. Who cares if the flu kills 30,000 people? And I'm like, I do. Get your flu shot.
Oh, you are spot on. The whole flu argument drives me crazy. And you might have seen there was these two doctors out in Bakersfield, and they own this set of urgent cares down there. And they've become big talking points amongst people who are trying to downplay the COVID, because they put together this press conference where they had all these crazy numbers that don't entirely make all that much sense. But the long and the short of it for our listeners who haven't listened yet is that they came together with this press conference. They said, look, in our facilities, what we've done is we've tested a bunch of people, and we got this number. They pulled like 12%. They did this weird math to get to like a 12% infected figure. They extrapolated that in some really weird way, which doesn't make sense. But even if you were just to give them the credit for that, then they sort of said, well, compared to the amount of people we tested that had it and were positive, and the amount of deaths that we've seen, we think the death rate is really, really low, 0.03%, which they're saying, you shouldn't be afraid of this. The flu is much worse. The flu is much worse. This is nothing but the flu. This is like, and now they're on like Laura Ingraham show. They're on all the Fox talk shows. And it's such an example of science being used badly to express a point that they're clearly trying to make. Did you get a chance to see that? What do you think?
Yeah. I did see it. It was gross. I was just talking to a friend about this. Susie Wiles is a scientist in New Zealand who has been so great at spreading good science communication about flattening the curve. She was like one of the first people to put out a graph of flattening the curve and how important it is. And I was talking to her the other day, and she was telling me how in New Zealand, they have these guys, you know, that are arguing that it's not a big deal and blah, blah, blah. And I was saying like, yeah, it's always annoying. And it's usually like experts, but it's usually engineers. Like, it's pretty much always engineers, like engineers for 9/11 truth and engineers for climate change is a hoax. But she was like, no, it's actually like doctors, or, you know, maybe not doctors, but like people who should know better. And that's like that's the worst thing. That's why, you know, the anti-vaccination stuff took off, is because Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who has since been, you know, completely, he can't practice anywhere anymore. But, you know, when you've got that doctor in front of your name, anything you say, people are going to listen to. And so, that's what I've seen my family doing. And they're just taking after Fox News, which is, it doesn't matter if 99% of epidemiologists say one thing. You find the one guy who is going to say the thing that you want to hear.
Right.
Right.
And then you broadcast it loudly.
Exactly. It's like, well, speaking of sampling bias, that's exactly the problem with that study that these two guys did.
Yeah.
It's like,
they were extrapolating from people who came into their urgent care to get tested.
Exactly.
And they're like, oh, so that's, if we just extrapolate that to the general population, and it's like, you numb nuts.
You know what it's like? You know what it's like? It's like if you were to watch porn and be like, I'm going to estimate the average American male penis size based on the porn stars I see. That's how you get a weird number that does not face reality.
Who gave these guys a platform? I mean, this is another problem, right? Can you just like get a microphone and call a TV station and say, I want to say something? Like, is that, like, there's a problem. There's a fundamental problem that
you're right. We should totally voices, do that.
That their voices were echoed or magnified or whatever you want to say. Like, you know, that you have to question that stuff. Like you're saying, critical thinking. When I see doctor and scientists, I do immediately give them the benefit of the truth. I'll say not the benefit of the benefit of the truth, but somehow they were able to speak and had a platform. And that's the thing that I would ask about this that I haven't looked up, or I haven't seen the video myself, or
it's the data. You know, it's money. It's money. They run these urgent care clinics. They have the money to hire a PR agency, and that's honestly all you need. Yeah. I the number of debunks I've had to do on mainstream, quote unquote, science news articles that are just press releases that have been printed with someone else's byline. When I see something that is like, this seems like a press release, I just scan and I look for the first quote, because I actually went to school for marketing and advertising. So I used to write press releases quite a bit, and you always have to have a quote from like the president of the company or something. So you just look for your first quote and look at the person who's being quoted. Like, and who are they? Oh, well, they run an urgent care clinic in California, and you know,
right. Their bottom line was hurt by it.
Yeah. That's who bought this article, this press release. It also just happened with the Stanford study on the COVID-19 antibody tests.
Right. That
was a big news story that was on a local Bay Area news site. And I read it, like a friend sent it to me. She's like, oh, look at this. Maybe we had COVID-19 already, because we're both anxious bitches, and it wouldn't it be great if we already had it and we're immune now? And I looked at this article, and it was like, oh, these Stanford researchers found they did these antibody tests in the Bay Area, and the first quote is this guy from Stanford saying, yeah, so it looks like this came to the Bay Area probably in the fall, actually, of 2019. And so, you know, and then they start talking about how the Bay Area might have herd immunity. And I actually forwarded it to someone else who's been on Quizitron. And it turns out that the first person quoted in the article is from Stanford, but from a right-wing think tank that's associated with Stanford, and actually had nothing to do with the study in question.
Yeah.
And when people reached out to the researchers who did the study, they said, our study in no way suggests that coronavirus was in the Bay Area in fall. Like, absolutely not.
Yeah. It was really misleading the way it was written. I know the article you're talking about herd immunity, and it's been used and co-opted.
Herd immunity is in the headline.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's my job to suss out bullshit. And I was like, oh shit, yeah, because it was something Denver, I wanted to believe.
Right.
People will pay for the, you know, pay for the name, and they'll believe it once you say Stanford, even if it's like the janitor, you know, like, oh, I'm a Stanford janitor, and you just have a badge and you like.
And you that's know, like, you know, that's really on the quote unquote journalists. You know, because at that point, like, I don't fault anyone reading that because it was so misleading. Like, to talk about a study from Stanford and then have your first and next three quotes be from someone, quote unquote, at Stanford, but who had nothing to do with the study. Yeah. So, you know what probably happened? I'm just guessing. A future judge presiding over my libel case. This is just my opinion. but it certainly seems like that guy that was the first quote sent out a press release. This guy who's a pro-Trump, anti-quarantine activist sent out a press release and got a bite. And the journalist just wrote this article without asking any real questions.
But you're right. That's just poor journalism, I guess.
Yeah.
If you're not vetting your sources well enough, or you're not asking two or three people about the topic, right? I mean, that's
And that's how your pseudoscience sausage gets made. It's not
that's a great term.
It's not just a bunch of dum-dums like believing whatever is put in front of them. It's a system that's designed to fool people into believing what is going to benefit the people who are spreading the pseudoscience, the people who own the stocks, the people who want the economy to open. You know, it could, if divorced from reality, that could sound like a conspiracy theory, but it's true. You got a load of money, you want to keep it. And if you have very few morals, then yeah, you spread this misinformation and people gobble it up because it's what they want to believe.
I mean, it's hard to not be skeptical. And it did. It got co-opted, this term, this one thing that came out from a local news station quickly became co-opted by people on the right-wing media, right-wing in general, as a talking point. And it's a dangerous one.
Yeah. I mean, can you, I guess, Rebecca, then just tell for our listeners who don't know what that term means, herd immunity, like what does it mean in science for real? Because it's a legitimate term to use, but it doesn't apply to the coronavirus.
Well, I love the question. And if it were coming from a lay person, I would answer without reservation. The fact that it's coming from doctors, I'm like, you should explain this because I'm going to fuck it up. And that's, I think, an important thing to look for in a science communicator, right? Is someone who knows when they're outclassed and like has the ability to pass it along to someone who knows better.
Right. I appreciate what you're saying. And I'm going to throw it right back in your court because now you have more you have more credibility when you do things like that. But I also know that you are an expert in communicating this stuff, you know, and I do think our listeners should hear it from someone who's processed it and regurgitated it and sunk on it a long time and will give it to our listeners in a way that's really palatable and delicious.
And we want to judge you is why we're doing this.
Yeah. All right. That's fair.
You know what? We were on your quiz show. Now you're on ours.
Oh, ooh. No.
This is Quizzo G.I. Tron. Boom.
Oh, no. So yeah, the idea of herd immunity, this is why I encourage people to get their annual flu shot. The idea is that you don't necessarily need every single person to get their flu shot in order to eradicate the flu or any other disease that we have a vaccine for. What we need to do is to get to the point where a high enough percentage of people become immune to it that the disease can't spread and it dies out. And that is generally going to be, I mean, I might be wrong at this number, correct me if I'm wrong, but at least it's going to be like 80% of the population needs to be immune. But we hope to get it up to like 90, 95% of the population. Because once you have that many people who have their vaccine, who can't catch the disease and spread it to others, now you are protecting the people who can't get a vaccine. So newborn infants, you have immunocompromised people, you have, people who are going through chemotherapy. You know, there are a lot of people out there that can't get their vaccines or that are going to be more affected by diseases than the general population. So by everybody else protecting themselves, you are protecting that percentage that can't get vaccinated. So part of the problem with this article arguing that maybe California had herd immunity, they found that something like, and I don't have it in front of me, but it the Stanford research, which by the way, the research itself was not peer reviewed. They didn't put out all their data. Mm-hmm. They used antibody tests that are not necessarily valid. Having a positive antibody test for this particular virus does not necessarily mean that you're immune to it. We hope it means that because it means that for a lot of other viruses, right. But it doesn't necessarily mean it for this. And that test found that it was something like 6% of the population. So you compare that to what doctors are actually talking about when they talk about herd immunity, which is like 80 to 90% of the population compared to 6%. Like, you're not even fucking close.
No, yeah.
Like, shut up.
Well, you
know? Shut up.
Well said. Well said.
Very That's, good. Yeah.
To reach herd immunity in 2020 would require some public health catastrophe to occur.
Yeah.
Because you need to have 70% or more of the American population to become immune. And without a vaccine, that's like over 200 million Americans are going to have to get infected to reach that threshold. So it could be it would be an awful thing. And when you talk about the antibodies and you say they need to, we don't know if they're valid. You mean they haven't been validated. We usually start studies. There's so many studies, and each study, what they do is they build on other studies and they build on other studies. And we don't even have a study, as far as I know, that validates that. Just like you said, other coronaviruses that cause a common cold, we think that maybe they last about 6 months. This one, we don't even know if it's that long. So we don't know.
Right.
South Korea studies have made it a little more confusing with reinfections, and there's a lot of reasons why that might be. But so, yeah, well done. Well said.
thanks.
Let me ask you this. I think we'll probably let you go because we've taken up a lot of your time. But
it is Cinco de Mayo, and I do have
a margarita. I see a margarita in the background there.
I need to get back to that.
Get back. So, overall, how would you say mainstream media has been doing? Have they been doing a good job covering this, a bad job, mixed bag?
Oh boy, by what metric? You know, I mean, I have generally low standards for science communication in mainstream media. You know, for the last 20 years, newspapers have been firing their science writers and giving science news to generalists who don't understand what questions to ask. They don't understand what context to add. So, I mean, they're doing what I would expect, you know, a bunch of people who don't understand science or science reporting to do in the midst of a pandemic that's being grossly mishandled by politicians who outright lie to them on a daily basis, you know? I'm going to say bad overall. Because
so what you're saying, what I'm hearing, is that shows like The House of Pod and Quizotron are more important than ever.
Absolutely.
Right. Kaveh said we're going to let you go, but I want to ask you one more question. Sure. If you have to go, you can not. But because I've seen you and heard you talk about lady culture. So, you know, Kaveh can take his earphones off and go pee standing up somewhere.
But we're going to talk about menstruation for a bit.
Well, that's what you've said, right? That you suck at like being a lady. You can't keep track of your period.
I do. I'm the worst.
You suck at makeup. And I relate to some of those things. You know, I was a D1 athlete. Like, I'm the athlete at the House of Pod. Kaveh knows this. He says lacrosse isn't a real sport, but it totally was.
Lacrosse is fucking hardcore. Are you kidding, Kaveh?
Hard Kaveh.
Kaveh, you would die. You would literally die. And I would join Fox News and saying, you know what? He had it coming.
He had a precondition of hating lacrosse. Yeah,
that was a pre-existing condition.
Exactly. So more importantly, one thing that you have been very vocal about is your love of video games. I'm sure people during this quarantine are playing a ton of video games. I'm sure there's a lot of porn going on too, but we're not going to talk too much about the porn thing.
Yeah. The lizard's like, I bet there's.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't know anything about that.
I've never heard of it.
I read this thing on Twitter about people having sex on TV. So, anyway, so, and we've talked a lot on the show tonight about empathy, you know, and how video games actually, you know, helped you develop this empathy for people, and also like a great way to deal with frustration. You know, let's go murder some bitches and hoes on this video game. Like, so how do you right now, what would you tell to our listeners as far as this quarantine being holed up? We don't have to talk about porn, but like, how can we, do you use video games as an escape? Is it a great way to connect to people? Is it both? Because those two things sound kind of polar opposites to me, you know?
You know what? I have a really good friend of mine who lives not too far from me, but I haven't seen her since this whole thing started, you know, 2 months ago. And we normally get together over wine. And we realized, like, she was being very quiet on a group chat we're in, and even like we did a Zoom, you know, and she was really quiet the whole time. So I texted her and I was just like, hey man, you doing all right? She's like, yeah, I just don't get a lot of the social stuff from Zooms and texts, and I really miss a lot of that stuff. And I was like, you know what? I get it. Like, I'm the same way. I don't get the same dopamine hit from doing a Zoom as I do as of just hanging out with friends. And she texted me the other day and she was like, hey, I'm going to hop on Overwatch. Do you want to get on? And I was like, oh, yeah. So Overwatch is it's a first person shooter where you're on teams of six v six. And so we get on and we get on voice chat together. And that's when we started actually talking and catching up. Like, I would never call her. She would never call me. We would be disgusted by the mere idea of calling each other. But we will totally hop on this game together and murder teenage boys while catching up on what we're each doing, you know. And I think that's true of a lot of people, especially a lot of younger people, you know, use Fortnite and things like that for that purpose. So that is one thing to do. It's just nice to have something to do while you talk to each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, like video games, I make the argument that they're like any other media, like film or books. And I actually made a video about this, a YouTube video about this recently, where I argue that the more deep media you consume, I think the more empathetic you are. And by deep, I mean things that put you into another person's mind and force you to consider how things affect them. So, you know, a lot of video games are stupid garbage, including Overwatch, which I play. But there are games like Gone Home where you are put into the persona of a girl who's come home from college and is learning more about her teenage sister, you know. And I think the more things that we can consume like that, the more literature, the more film, the more video games we do, the more empathetic we get. And the more we can put ourselves into the shoes of others, and the better humanity gets. So
I'm still playing Leisure Suit Larry, so I haven't got to these other games that you're on right now.
Yeah, well, it's important to inhabit the body of a horny white man in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. We need more empathy right now for what's going on and trying to figure out how to connect during quarantine. So that, I think, is a great way to finish. So if you could send us links for your flu shot commercial, which would be awesome.
Sure.
For how to connect to deeper media, and also your video that you said is coming out soon about how science and medicine can potentially win, or maybe just not lose, during the pandemic. That would be great.
It'd be my pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming on. You're just awesome.
And are too.
We're just glad you exist and you're online. So
thank mutual.
You. Yeah. Thank you for that. And thank you for doing what you do. Please let people know where they can find you.
Sure. You can find me at skeptchick.org is my website, where I blog with a bunch of other mostly women critical thinkers. You can find me on Twitter at Rebecca Watson. And since we've mentioned video games, I also play video games pretty much every weekday at Rebecca Versus on Twitch. So that's twitch.tv.
Very cool. And we'll put links to some of these YouTube videos. Your YouTube channel is great. Working with us.
Thank you.
Your name, Rebecca Watson.
I think it's just my name. I don't know. I'm terrible.
All right. We'll put a link. We'll put a link to it.
I studied advertising. I don't know what my YouTube is.
You're like, I don't even know how to spell my
name. I don't know my primary income. Oh, you can find me on Patreon at patreon.com/Rebecca. There we go.
That's the important one. Okay. Thank you. Please check her out. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
Trust me, I know when I suck. I'll tell you when I'm good.
No, that's true. That is true. He will tell you when he's...
The opinions on this podcast are broadcasted for educational and informational purposes only and do not represent the opinions of our employers. These opinions are not intended as a diagnosis, treatment, or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a local physician or other healthcare professional for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs or concerns. All anecdotes and patient-related details have been changed with respect to date, sex, and certain details so that patient identification is not possible.